the greatest season in Red Sox history record-wise that ends in a world championship does not end with Alex Cora taking home the American League Manager of the Year honors. Is anyone really outraged by this? Is there any, like, you're looking for outrage. You're looking for emotion. Is there anyone really outraged? I don't think so. But Alex Cora snubbed for Bob Melvin. Bob Melvin. Now, I have not heard this yet, but on the state-run MLB network, they made the announcement, a gala announcement. And so let's go to the audio tape, but producer John has the audio here. Here's how it sounded as they announced the winner of the Manager of the Year.
There are now eight managers who have won the Manager of the Year award three or more times. The latest is the Athletics' Bob Melvin, this year's American League winner, who was listed first on 18 of the 30 writers' ballots. Runner-up Alex Cora of the Red Sox received seven first-place votes, and third-place Kevin Cash of the Rays got five. Melvin previously won with Oakland in 2012 and in the National League with Arizona in 2007.
All right, so that's a guy that's not normally on television. I don't know who that was. It sounds like somebody from the Baseball Writers Association, but that's a guy who's very awkward. And see, there's so many baseball writers that just take TV and radio jobs. They couldn't find some guy to go on there that was, polished. It's a little choppy there. Just a little choppy. Pretty choppy, I would say.
The latest is the Athletics' Bob Melvin.
Was that he had to be reading from a prepared statement, right? That had to be the prepared statement, yes?
Yeah, that was like high school chemistry video boring.
Sounded like, you know what it sounded like? It was like he was like a hostage letter or something. He was clearly, play it again. He was reading, right? You can tell the guy's reading. Let's see.
There are now eight managers who have won the Manager of the Year award three or more times. The latest is the Athletics' Bob Melvin, this year's American League winner, who was listed first on 18 of the...
Congratulations.
Sounds like Walter Cronkite. Like, it sounds like he's reading off like a teleprompter. It doesn't sound like he's the first person to state this.
Here's the news. Here's your news. It's pretty much, that's it. All right, so I want to talk about this briefly. Now we have the audio yet. Alex Cora talked a little bit. Actually, was on the MLB network. He was interviewed about all of this, and maybe we'll play that at some point. But if you look at the history of baseball, the deck has definitely been stacked. It was stacked against Alex Cora, but we have that. All right, let's go to the audio tape. Here it is, Alex Cora's reaction to all this.
Well, it all started in Caguas, Puerto Rico. My dad, who passed away when I was 13, he was the founder of our Little League chapter, and my mom. They did an outstanding job raising me. I was very lucky to have my dad for 13 years, and then my mom, she's still there with us. The other two, besides my whole family, is Joey. I think Joey, he was the guy I always follow. You know, he went to college in the United States. I did the same thing. He became a professional baseball player. I follow him. He became a coach. I did the same thing. And then, you know, I became a manager. And hopefully one of these days he becomes a manager. And then the other one was Sandy Alomar Sr. He managed me in 2000 in winter ball. And one thing about Sandy, just like Robbie and Sandy Jr., they pay attention to details. And throughout the game, there's always something going on that would tell you what to do. There's some detail or something happens that the opposition can take advantage of it. And he was the one that helped me out to start looking at the game a little bit different. And, since that day, since the day he started managing me in 2000, I started seeing the game a little bit different. And I tried to implement this with the Red Sox, and obviously it worked.
That was a concession speech. That sounded like a victory speech at the beginning, didn't it? I don't know. That's okay. There you go. That's Alex Cora there, who finished runner-up. Runner-up for the American League Manager of the Year. All right, so let's frame it this way again. The question is, are you surprised that Alex Cora did not win? No, I am not. Now, I've got by the book and the uphill battle. All right, real quick. A, Bob Melvin had every possible advantage. If you look at the way this goes, if you're a historian of how they hand out these awards, Melvin was coaching in the outhouse in Oakland, right? A bunch of tight wads. The A's don't spend money on players. They got a shoestring budget. It's a faceless, nondescript roster that the A's had. shoestring budget, as I mentioned, rags to riches always wins. If it's close, rags to riches is going to win. Goliath beating David is not the story that hands out awards. But if you manage a team that doesn't spend a lot of money on payroll compared to the other teams and has a roster of mostly nondescript players and you have a good year, you're going to have an advantage in winning these awards. And so Bob Melvin won the award. Congratulations. There you go. Low payroll, they had a bunch of starting pitchers and all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. Alex Cora, he had the Stars, big payroll, uphill battle. When you look at it, I saw the list, which is going around. I don't know if you saw the list of managers that won 100 games that also won Manager of the Year. It doesn't happen very often. It's not a long list. Like the names on there, if you go back, the Sparky Anderson with the Tigers of 1984, he won Manager of the Year. La Russa, who's a Red Sox consultant back in the Oakland A's, 1980s days, he won. Joe Torre only once with the Yankees. He got the award. Lou Piniella, I think, is the last to do it with that Mariner team that won 116 games and then lost in the playoffs. And then in Whitey Herzog also. But it's a very small list. Dusty Baker's on there. And there's not very many names comparison to the guys that manage teams that did not have a bunch of stars and ended up having surprising seasons. Right? Because there's no expectation. That's the blessing. When you have the blessing of no expectations and the curse of high expectations, that's how that works. All right, now speaking of baseball, what I want to get into here, the winds of change coming to professional baseball. Now, this week, the owners are getting together. And week before Thanksgiving, a little chit-chat there. And there's a lot of chatter around baseball, though it hasn't gotten and spilled over to the radio very much. It hasn't gotten to our medium very much. But I'm interested in this because I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to this kind of stuff. So they're getting together, the owners, and there is consideration for some dramatic changes coming to a ballpark near you, right? And if you've not followed this, the commissioner, Rob Manfred, is said to be open-minded to some radical changes. Now, what would those radical changes be? And again, it's up to the owners. The owners have to, in cahoots with Rob Manfred, sign off on this. And then there's also the layer of bureaucracy with the players' union. Some of this stuff, they don't have to even ask the players' union. They can just implement without the players having any kind of say. But some of the things said to be considered at the upcoming owners' meetings for baseball, talk of limiting the shift, putting a cap on the number of pitching changes that you can make, changing the replay review system, altering that. There's also more chatter about a pitch clock, kind of like how the NBA has the shot clock. I know they have a pitch clock in baseball, but it's not really enforced. There's even some consideration to cutting back on the commercials. They did that a little bit this past year, but there's talk of cutting back even more and having more in-game advertising to try to make up the difference on the advertising load. So all of this is in play. And I wanted to discuss, now the traditionalists have already chimed in, and I've heard the noise that, oh no, the Guardians of Baseball should do nothing. Status quo. Nothing, nothing, nothing at all. Now, I'm taking the opposite side. Now, I have an idea here. I have an idea for baseball, and I want to run this by you. I want to see if you approve of this. The question is, what should baseball owners prioritize of this list? I gave you a bunch of stuff, right? The shift, pitching changes, replay review, pitch clock that's actually enforced, limiting commercial breaks. Like, I'm all for limiting commercial breaks, but that's what pays the bills. That's the last thing you're going to do. You're not going to cut back on the overall commercial load. And I think what baseball did this past year when they cut back some of the time, they just shifted it elsewhere. So you're still getting the full commercial load. It's just been moved around. That's a shell game that they've done. But the suggestion that I have for baseball when these owners get together and schmooze and drink expensive alcohol and eat food that I can't afford because I'm a night overnight radio guy. I've got the advice here. Just get rid, not get rid of, you can't get rid of it, but limit, put a cap on the number of pitching changes. Put a cap, right? So to expand on that, we've got steroids, the cheat code, and the ribbon. And we'll mix all this together. A, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, his goal should be, and the owner's goal should be, to discourage the use of bullpens. Not encourage it, and especially that blight, that disease that has spread around baseball, these bullpen games. It is bad for everyone. It's bad for the sport. And I reached my breaking point in the postseason. We saw the Oakland Athletics in a playoff game against the Yankees, bullpen game. The Milwaukee Brewers in the National League Championship Series had a parade of relievers. And it was in multiple postseason games. The word for this is embarrassing. Like Craig Counsell, who was in the running for Manager of the Year in the National League, he didn't win it. He turned this into a sideshow. And you know, it's not just the Brewers, but it's the Tampa Bay Rays, the Oakland Athletics, and the American League. There's some other teams also. Now, you can't unring the bell, right? The old line, you can't unring the bell. However, you can change the rules and attempt to nip this in the bud. If you're Major League Baseball, I don't mean the Bud Selig. You can attempt to put the kibosh on this. It is the most unnecessary thing in baseball. And if you're looking for areas to change the game, this is where I start. And I didn't feel this way a couple years ago. I feel this way today. And it's partially because of the paralysis of analysis that's going on right now. It's the micromanaging on steroids in baseball. So my theory is you put a cap on the number of pitching changes per game. Now, you might have to start with just the number of pitching changes per inning, but let's say you shouldn't need to make more than 5 pitching changes per game. Now, I think that number's high. I would like to go lower. I would like to go to the number 4. If you need more than 4 pitchers to make it through a game, there's something wrong with you. All right. And if you go extra innings, I'm willing, I'm open-minded to evolve that and add some extra pitching changes. But after that, if you run out of pitching changes, then there's got to be some kind of violation. You know, I would say just put a position player on the mound. You know, teams had no problem this past year putting position players on the mound anyway. But imagine the strategy where you actually, you talk about manager of the year and these decisions these guys are making. How fatiguing, how exhausting, that's a better word, exhausting would it be when these managers have to decide, do I take this pitcher out? I only have 5 pitching changes I can make or 4 pitching changes I can make. Do I take this pitcher out? Do I leave him in for one more batter? It would also increase offense in theory, right? Theoretically, if you leave pitchers in the game longer, the offense will increase, which is not a bad thing. It would add intrigue. There'd be an extra layer of drama for managers to actually get this, manage the game, rather than just go paint by numbers and say, well, the data we have say that we have to bring in this pitcher. The algorithms indicate that this pitcher against this batter, that's the way to do it. Actually have the human element matter. Bring it back. Now, it's not just Craig Counsell. Dave Roberts in the World Series, which the Red Sox were clearly the beneficiary of this, but in the World Series, Dave Roberts brought in a conga line of vomit, the parade of vomit out of the Dodger bullpen, and the Red Sox unloaded on pitcher after pitcher that kept wetting the bed. Well, the analytics said that should not have happened because these guys, according to the stats, they were the top pitchers out there. Is it a bad thing to force pitchers to show some grit? Face multiple batters. How about just a simple change where if you go to the bullpen, you can't make a pitching change just for situational reasons as far as if you bring in a left-handed reliever, he's got to face 2 batters. You can't just bring in a left-handed specialist to face 1 batter. even that, if you want to do baby steps, I'm open to that. Now, part B of this, the other changes I would hold off on. To me, there is no need to get rid of the shift. I know how to break the shift. I can advise every team in baseball. Most smart baseball consumers already know this. The cheat code to the shift, it's called hitting the ball the other way. Or, this is draconian, how about bunting? Oh, my God, you can't do that. Oh, that's cold-blooded. You're cold-blooded. You can't ask a professional baseball player to bunt against the shift. What is wrong with you? You're barbaric. You're heartless is what you are. Yeah, I've had multiple managers over my years where I've been doing this gas baggery, and I've been fortunate to interview these guys, usually at the ballpark. But they'll tell you, like, I have guys that don't know how to bunt. So I can't have them bunt because they don't know how to bunt. Well, I would not get rid of the shift, and I would just encourage these players to do it. And if you bunt or choke up on the bat and hit the ball the opposite way away from the shift, teams are going to stop doing it. But if you're so stubborn, if you're so unable to adapt, you deserve to ground out to the shortstop who happens to be playing in shallow right field where the second baseman, you know, behind the second baseman, you deserve to ground out. But I am confident that if forced to do it, the modern player is capable of choking up on the bat. And, you know, I talked to some of these old school guys, and old school guys always love to romanticize about back in their day, how they did things. But it was something you just did when you got a couple of strikes or you choke up, you try to hit the ball where the defense isn't. As far as the pitch clock, I'm not there yet with the pitch clock. We'll check back on that. But I am open to some unorthodox ideas. The designated hitter was a gimmick, right? I mean, if you follow this and you've been around, if you're an old timer, you know this, but if you don't know the origins of the designated hitter, it was an attempt to increase ticket sales, to extend the careers of aging stars that were popular and sell more tickets, but it was also a way to increase offense. It's a gimmick. That gimmick has been around since the 1970s and is going to stick around. It's going to be part of the National League. I mean, let's face it, you saw in the World Series, you see it every year if you watch the National League also, pitchers suck. They don't want to, most of them don't try to hit. They just go up there and they hold the bat on their shoulder, and there's like two or three pitchers that actually attempt to be productive offensive players. And these guys also need bubble wrap. Is there any athlete that is more delicate than a pitcher? I mean, that's the flower is the pussy willow flower, I believe. And these pitchers, they're big fans of that. All right, the last thing is real quick. We'll take some phone calls. I see some guys calling on this. Major League Baseball owners, one thing we can agree on here, when they're actually asked to change things, they become agitated. They're like they're tormented with having to change things. And these owner meetings that are taking place, my prediction is what's going to happen is a whole lot of nothing. That they're going to talk about, say, well, we have some recommendations, but we want a blue ribbon panel to come forward, and it's like they attempted some weird shenanigans. What's that international thing? I forget the World Baseball Classic. That's it, the World Baseball Classic. Remember they started runners on second base in extra innings just to see what would happen. You'd put a runner at second base and just to try to get the game to end. They experimented with that stuff. So I predict, and it's not really a leap of faith, that what's going to happen here is that in whether it's the next World Baseball Classic or the spring training, God knows, the Mexican League, the Fall League, the whatever league you want to go with, that they'll try to implement and experiment with this. And they will spend years contemplating and attempting to fine-tune rather than just make a move. The pitching change thing needs to be limited. You get to the seventh, the eighth inning, of these late season games, these playoff games, and it is boring. It reminds me of the argument people make against the NBA. And I try to change it in the NBA, but when you watch the NBA, and I like the NBA, when you watch the NBA, the last couple minutes of an NBA game, it is a timeout palooza. It's a nightmare. Right? The part of the game that should be the most enjoyable sucks. It's unwatchable. And I would argue watching the baseball playoffs this past year, and I was fortunate enough to go to some of those games, when you switch pitchers four times in an inning because you're trying to go right-handed, you know, righty-lefty, righty-lefty, everyone's a specialist. It might be fine baseball strategy, but from an entertainment standpoint, this is entertainment. It is painful. You're also adding, everyone talks about pace of play and all that. There's no pace of play. You're adding at least 30 minutes of time, no real game action. So that's the move, man. That would be the move I would make. And I know it's uncomfortable for some people. You can't do that. Yeah, leave the game alone. I'm usually in the leave the game alone category. But after watching Craig Counsell and Dave Roberts and the Rays and the A's, and I had enough. I'm it. I reached my tipping point. I'm done. Put a limit on it, whether even if it's only for amount of pitchers you can use in an inning, but you put a stop. End it. Done. Right, we'll take your phone calls. This is a John Anderson production. The number, 617-779-7937. That's 617-779-7937. So you can be part of this. We're also on Twitter, at Ben Maller. We'll have the reading of the tweets. Always an exciting time. We'll have that. Kind of a weak night on Twitter. It's a bad job by you guys. It's a bad job by you. But we will... we'll press on here, and straight ahead, we'll take your phone calls, and not so special. We'll get to that as well. We'll do it next.
There are now eight managers who have won the Manager of the Year award three or more times. The latest is the Athletics' Bob Melvin, this year's American League winner, who was listed first on 18 of the 30 writers' ballots. Runner-up Alex Cora of the Red Sox received 7 first-place votes, and third place Kevin Cash of the Rays got 5. Melvin previously won with Oakland in 2012 and in the National League with Arizona in 2007.
Yeah. In baseball, you might, you know, dress it up a little bit. I'm just saying. The announcement, what's up with that? There you go. All right. Music. They get the whole song and dance. Get the whole thing. All right. So I did a very long-winded Maller monologue there about baseball, because the owners are getting together and there's talk of, will they actually make any changes? And my recommendation is to limit the number of pitching changes. Now, my idea is, like, hey, you know, 5 pitching changes. You shouldn't need more than 5 pitchers. I'd like to go lower than that, but that's my recommendation. I've had enough. I'm at my wit's end there after what happened in the playoffs this year and the new trend, which is spreading around, of managers over, it's over-managing, it's paralysis by analysis, all that stuff. Let's go to Chris in Rhode Island, who's up next here. It is late night on WEEI. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, Ben, how are you?
All right, man, what's up?
Hey, I agree with you fully there with the pitching changes. I was just thinking of a little different angle than you were, though. Instead of capping the number of pitchers you could have per inning, I think you just have one guy. If he starts the inning, he's your guy for that inning. Barring pitch count or anything like that. But, you know, these mid-inning pitching changes, they're what's dragging the innings on. You have some managers that'll, you'll get 2 outs, and then they'll go, oh, you know, let's bring in the guy to get the 3rd out. He'll come in for 1 pitch. And they ground ball out, and then you're out of the inning, and it's like you just had 2 minutes of commercials waiting for the pitching change, and then the guy gets one ground ball out, and it's another 2-minute commercial.
Yeah. You know what? The breaking point for me, Chris, was in the NLCS when Counsell started Wade Miley and took him out after one batter.
One batter.
Yep. One batter. Yep, he took him out. Wade Miley started a playoff game, walked the first batter, and they took him out, and then he started the next game. That's a joke. That's embarrassing. Yeah,
I think that was all for the lineup, though. I think that he announced Miley as the lefty starter, so that way it would set the Dodgers lineup to face the lefty.
Yeah.
He only faced the one batter, and then he put the righty in there.
And they lost. Correct. They lost anyway, Chris. It didn't matter. Yeah. They lost that game anyway, so.
Yeah, but I mean, if you got you know, your starter goes deep and you got to pull him in the middle of an inning, you know, because of pitch count, that's one thing. But I think, you know, when you get, like you said, late in the game, you know, a guy comes in, he's got to pitch the whole inning, you know, and then you can change pitchers after the inning's over. It might change strategy a little bit. You know, a manager might have to think a little bit, like, oh, who am I going to bring in for the seventh, you know, and he's going to own the seventh, you know.
Yeah, but I like where you're going with that, Chris, but they're not going to allow it where he has to finish the inning. They could do it, though. You have to face at least two batters because then you can't – it eliminates the single left-handed specialist that comes in to face one batter. So if you say you come in out of the bullpen, you got to face two batters, well, that changes the strategy if you're bringing in a left-handed pitcher and then you look at the other team's lineup and you might not want to do that. So – anyway, all right, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. There's Chris in Rhode Island driving around. That opens a line up for you at 617-779-7937, and you can be part of the fun. So, so much fun. Judge Reed is listening. He says he is eating some food, and he's listening to the show. And he then sent a picture of the food, which looks just marvelous. Some kind of beef.
Looks like a bacon burger to me.
Oh, is that
curly fries? Yeah.
I see you're looking too. Yeah, the curly fries there look pretty good.
Also claims he's waiting to get on the show, and he is not on a line right now.
So he's lying.
So yeah, he's lying and he's eating unhealthy food. That is making me jealous.
It does look pretty good. You ever been? I don't know where Judge Reed's at. I think he's in Kansas City. Have you ever had barbecue, like Kansas City barbecue?
I've never left the East Coast, unless you consider Mexico not the East Coast. But it was the eastern side of it, so I guess not. So
you consider that the East Coast, yeah.
Well, it is
yeah.
The eastern coast. It's just not the East Coast.
Yeah. I love barbecue because, you know, barbecue is great. But of all the barbecue, Kansas City barbecue, better than Texas barbecue, better than, like, Carolina barbecue, better than Memphis barbecue. Kansas City is the holy land for barbecue.
You know what move he's doing that I love here too, that I also do, and I get catch a lot of flack from it.
Yeah.
He's got fries in his burger.
Well, that's like a Pittsburgh move. And they do that in Pittsburgh, right? That Primanti brothers, they put the fries in the burger. Isn't that how they do that in the sandwich?
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I would do my mom when I was a kid would make me these tuna fish sandwiches. I ate so much tuna fish when I was a kid. I don't want to eat it anymore. I haven't had one in years. But to try to dress it up, I would put the chips in the sandwich, try to create a little more taste there.
Oh, I do that. I put Doritos in. Like, if I go to Subway, which I haven't been to in, like, 3 years, but I would put Cool Ranch Doritos in my steak and cheese sub.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I would go Fritos. I put Fritos in. I do that with turkey sandwiches, too. Like, I love Thanksgiving's coming up the day after Thanksgiving, the leftover turkey with the mayo, and you put some chips on top of that. That is...
It's not because I even particularly like... It doesn't, like, make it taste much better. I just like there being a crunch when I bite into it.
Yeah. I'm pro-crunch also. I'm pro-crunch also. Hector writes in. He says, Ben, baseball should cut games to 7 innings. They stopped selling beer after the 7th. Anyway, take the horrible middle relievers out of the game. See, the problem with that, Hector, see, your strategy is flawed. Because if the game went to 7 innings, they'd just stop selling beer after, what, the 6th or the 5th inning? But isn't the whole reason they stop selling beer is because they want people to sober up before they get on the road? Isn't that how that works?
Yeah, I think that's the idea behind it. But let's be honest, that's going to that there is a shelf life to that idea.
Well, yeah, because, first of all, who can afford to buy enough alcohol at a game to get intoxicated?
They're in the parking lot before is the issue.
Well, the pre-gaming. Yeah, I got you. The pre-game thing. Although I have seen some people. Have you seen this move where you can only buy two at a time, so you have to stack them. Like you put them under your seat for when they shut down the concession stands.
What, you like hoard beers?
Yeah, like you buy a couple at a time, and then you have like four ready to go when they close the concession stand.
I mean, I do that in my own home, so I just don't want to make as many trips to the fridge.
Yeah, yeah. So you're lazy. Is what you're admitting your laziness is what you're doing. Yeah, I like that. Ultimately, when you put like a mini fridge near your bed, that's when you know you've crossed over.
That's like the college dorm move. But then, as I found out in living off campus in dorms and now in an apartment around here, those kind of make the electric bill go up quite a bit.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, those are they do that.
Yeah. When you're pinching pennies. That is not the way to go. All right, now I wanted to mention, we're all over the place a little bit. We're talking a lot of baseball this hour, but I go back to the Patriots. And you know, no game this week, right? The whole thing, just kind of chilling out, kind of, you know, recovering, a week of recovery. But Bill Belichick, he's had a lot to say, and you, like everything with Belichick, you kind of listen between the words. You must listen between the words. And one of the issues here, and I saw, I think Phil Perry wrote about this. He talked about this, the breakdown on kick coverage, which has been a conundrum for the Patriots. It's been an issue, and Belichick talked about that. The Patriots are the fourth worst team in the NFL in terms of average yards allowed per kick return, which is a pernicious situation because you're allowing the team to start, obviously, closer to pay dirt, closer to the red zone, and thus, when you give up that many yards on kickoff returns, you set yourself up for a more of an arduous path defensively. And Belichick gave some generic answer. Patriots are 28th in the league in opponent starting field position. They're allowing offenses to begin their drives at the over the 30-yard line. And last season, they were number one in that category. So this is an area. If you're looking for ways the Patriots are not as good this year as they were last year, that is an obvious one. Just the basic special teams. And Belichick gave a conservative answer, as he usually does, but he was asked about it, the rule changes that have been implemented, whether or not that impacted the way the Patriots have been able to cover kicks. He said, yes. He says he thinks some of the rules have they've been relevant, and he said they've eliminated some things the NFL has that you can do on kickoff coverage, but that's another thing that has to be addressed. There's a lot of little things that add up to big, massive problems. Big, massive problems. All right, it is late night here. We're hanging out. We're mildly behind, but I bill myself as on time Maller, by the clock, for the clock, plausibly all about the clock. This hour, that would be a lie. That is a lie. We'll take some more calls, though. The number is 617-779-7937. Time now for the Insta trivia. Here it is. This is a convoluted one, but see if you can get it right. Here it is. And we'll go through this. I'm going to walk you through this point by point. So see if you can get it right. Now, Tom Brady has targeted a receiver 12 or more times in a game, 98 times in his career. Only twice has that receiver that's been targeted 12 or more times had a catch percentage below 33%. Now, Josh Gordon did it against the Tennessee Titans and blank. Again, listen closely. I know it's late. I know you're not completely focused on every word that I'm saying, but see, if you want to answer this on Twitter, at Ben Maller, Tom Brady has targeted a receiver 12 or more times in a game, 98 times in his career. Out of those 98 times, only twice has the receiver had a catch percentage below 33%. Josh Gordon became the second receiver in Tom Brady's career in this situation to do it. Josh Gordon and blank. Fill in the blank, the answer, more of your phone calls. We'll also have the Blair Witch Project. We'll get to that as well, and we will do it next. So we'll pay off the Insta trivia. We're breaking down. We're now analyzing. We don't know what's going on off the air. Me and John are analyzing menus. We're breaking down menus. I think we're getting hungry because that guy Judge Reed sent out a picture of a sandwich. So I'd like a nice sandwich right now. Here is the question. And in, we cross over the witching hour. Here it is. Tom Brady has targeted a receiver 12 or more times in a game, 98 times in his career. Only twice has the receiver's catch percentage been below 33%. Josh Gordon against the Titans this past weekend and blank. That is the question. What is the answer? Let's see. Some of the answers coming in here. Face down. Yeah, Ed is going with Jake the Snake Roberts as his answer. We have not only anybody, none of these people are right. The correct answer, just to for time reasons, you got to go back. It's only a couple years ago. Well, it's been 5 years now to 2013. Kimbrel Tompkins is the last receiver other than and the only receiver other than Josh Gordon.
Was it that Saints game?
It was the. Let me look it up. It's 2013. I think you're right here. This is
because he caught the game winner in that game as well, and he dropped everything else apparently.
Yeah. Well, Gordon on Sunday. This is from Boston Sports Info, the great Twitter feed there. But they have the breakdown here of catches and targets, and yeah, Josh Gordon. this is not good. He was targeted 14 times. He had 4 receptions. That was Tompkins in that game. It was 2013 against Buffalo, actually, not against the Saints, against Buffalo.
One of those games that Ryan Fitzpatrick just threw for like 500 yards.
Yeah, four catches on 14 targets. Josh Gordon, 4 receptions on 12 targets on Sunday.
Well, to be fair, his hand was dislocated 1 week prior, and Brady, for the rest of the game, I think Brady was trying to put it on his chest for most of the time, but if he ever had to use his hands, he was dropping all the passes.
Are you saying he should not have been out there? Is that what you're saying, John? Are you saying?
No, he has to be out there, because no, who else is going to be out there?
That's a good point. There's not much left. Let's go to Eric, who's next. It's a late night on EEI with me, Ben. What's going on, Eric?
Hey, how's it going?
Are you my sandwich guy, Eric? Do you have sandwich information?
I'm going to literally blow your mind.
All right. What do you got?
All right. You ready for this? It's called the Fat Chicken. It's a chicken parm sub with mozzarella sticks and French fries.
Sounds good. I like it. I approve.
I was talking to the guy who screened my calls, and there's a place in Cohasset, Massachusetts that's called Victoria's that have names like subs and sandwiches named after WEI guys. There's one called the Big O, which is a roast beef with onion rings and barbecue sauce and Swiss cheese. It's amazing. But the Fat Chicken takes the cake, 100%.
So you're saying of all that, and I don't know where that place, I'm not familiar with that, but you're saying that's the number one, the fat, that sounds really good. Like there's nothing bad about that. I mean, who doesn't like chicken parm, mozzarella sticks, that's a win, and then you've got fries. Right. Yeah.
You can't go wrong with it.
Now, Eric, I have a question for you. Would you prefer the Callahan, the Dale, or the Ordway?
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man. If you're talking about simplicity and boringness, I'd go with the Ordway. But that's, if you're going to go with something to spice it up, I'd go with the Callahan.
Now, let's say you didn't like the Dale one day. Would you ever swap it with the Ordway?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. I don't think so. I can't.
It's tough. We got to get more sandwiches named after guys here. That's what we got to do, Eric. You got to talk to those guys.
Well, that's the thing. We got because these are, I guess, they're really the guy who used to own this place was obsessed with WEI, so he would name all the sandwiches after that. People would come in, not even know who these people are. And then one day, I was like, "Wait, the Big O, is that really named?" He's like, "Yeah, all these." And there's a sandwich called the Mikey or Planet Mikey or something. And I forget what that one is, but it was just so weird how all these sandwiches is named after all these people, and people are like, "Who are these guys?" I was like, I guess no one listens to good radio. You must be listening to the Sports Hub over there, the fucking Crub Hub.
All right, calm down. He's a very passionate fan.
Now we just lost 20 seconds of great radio.
Yeah, that was really good radio that no one's going to be able to hear.
I mean, it'll be on the website at about probably 1:20 if anybody wants to hear what just happened there.
Yeah, all right. Is this where I should pat myself on the back and humble brag about how I have food dishes named after me? Is that?
Yeah, no, tell. Yeah, that's a good story. Go for it.
Yeah. So now, because of the overnight show, we're on. You know, the show's syndicated, so we're on all over the place. And I have My favorite one, well, I have a couple. I've had a few food dishes named after me that no longer exist. But I have a dish at a place called The Bird in Lawrence, Kansas. It is the number one gentleman's club in Lawrence, Kansas. It's called the Mowler Fowler. And it's a chicken sandwich that you can get. That's on the menu. There's a chicken fingers in Kansas City. What else do I have? I have a sandwich in Denver. I have more food dishes than like good ratings on my my resume. I used to have this place in Syracuse that had a dish named after me, but the damn restaurant, they sold the restaurant and the new owners changed the menu. So I was a victim of the menu. But yeah, I have nicknames, John, and I have food dishes named after me. That's pretty much my claim to fame.
At the number one gentleman's club, by the way.
Yeah, it's called the Bird. I've said every time Kansas has had good basketball teams, I've always said it's because when they bring recruits to visit Lawrence, Kansas, they go by the famous Flamingo Club, and that's where they do it. And then, just to follow up, the one in Denver, there's a chicken finger sandwich, like a chicken tender sandwich, the Mallard chicken tender sandwich. There was a Broncos player several years ago that was drunk and running away from the police. He was at that restaurant.
Swag Kelly.
I forget the guy's name. It wasn't him. He was running out of the restaurant, hiding in some mulch in front of the restaurant when the police tracked him down. So my theory is that he was eating the sandwich named after me when he got in trouble.
Quite a few big names from Lawrence, Kansas. I don't know if you knew any of these, but Kevin Harlan is from there. James Gunn, the director. And most notably, this one's relevant, Bill James.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bill James still lives. Doesn't he still live there? I think so.
Honestly didn't know who he was until this past week, and because really? I wasn't working here the last time he opened his mouth, so I never found out about it. I wasn't really following baseball.
Oh, okay. So, if you're like a baseball guy, like Bill James, though, he's like, he created, like, he was the godfather of all these advanced statistics and all that. Like, this is his baby. He was the, you know, the guy that created this parallel universe. But he's old now.
He invented stat nerds.
Pretty much. You know, the number one group, like this, they call it SABR, the Society for American Baseball Reference. I think that's what it is. But that's like his baby. Like sabermetrics, he came up with the term sabermetrics.
Comes across as very cultish, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not. This is not my thing. I mean, I'll use some stats, but yeah, it's like a little too much. You know, they have conventions though. These guys are like all in. They have conventions. There's different branches. It's
yeah. See that now it's even more cultish. Like I'm picturing the movie Yes Man. I'm picturing like a hall filled with stat nerds and some walkout music and screens with his face everywhere. And then he runs out and the crowd stands up and everyone goes wild.
I think it's like Jamestown or something like that. You think it's they're gonna go that far? Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Jonestown.
Jonestown.
Jamestown was that where all that was Roanoke. Never mind.
Yes. No. Jim Jones. That's Jonestown.
Yeah.
Who's that? Remember that guy? Boy, it was a long time ago. Now you were a kid probably, but Marshall Applewhite. You remember that guy?
No.
He was part. Oh, look it up. If you're into cults, he was the Heaven's Gate cult. They all wore like Nike shoes and thought they were going to go to a spaceship that was flying by.
Oh, and did they all kill themselves at one point they thought their souls would go up to it?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the like James Jonestown. I keep calling it Jamestown. Jonestown, Heaven's Gate. There was that
Waco.
David Koresh, right? The Branch Davidians.
Yep. Watch
right?
that if you haven't watched that yet on Paramount Network. 6 episode miniseries about Waco with Taylor Kitsch from Friday Night Lights stars as David Koresh. Awesome show.
Yeah, that was botched. Well, the Manson family, although they didn't kill themselves, they just killed other people.
That movie's coming out soon as well. The Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. Hollywood loves the cult. They can't get enough. They can't get enough of the cult. All right, it is late night here. Oh, my. Look at the time. We'll press on. We'll take some more of your phone calls if you'd like to be part. 617-779-7937. You can be part of the festivities. Also, if you want to email me, you know, when I got hired here, I've been back at the WEI, you know, doing a couple shows a week. Me and Gilroy, late night, right? You know, Gilroy does a lot of it, and I come in here a couple days a week, especially in the offseason when the Red Sox aren't playing. But they gave me this company email address. which is ben.maller@weei.com.
So have you been getting emails about the ugly sweater party?
I get emails about like when there's cupcakes in the office and all that. I love it.
Do too. And not only am I never here during the hours when the cupcakes would be here, but they're now this isn't even the office anymore.
Oh, that's right. The big move.
Yeah, I've never had access to the cupcakes before.
Yeah. And I've always done night radio, John, like I'm doing now with you and stuff. You know, here we are late at night. But the whole culture of a radio station, like the daytime culture and the nighttime culture, it's such a wild dichotomy from what happened. Like they had a Halloween party at Fox where I do the overnight show. And it was like, I think it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 1 o'clock, which is pretty much overnight for me. Right. Cause I'm just sleeping during the day. I'm not up. I got stuff to do like sleep. But anyway, all right. 617-779-7937. And if you take nothing else away from the show, we have learned that there is and I didn't know about this, and neither did you, John, that there's a Big O sandwich, and it's still on the menu. And I looked it up. The guy's not lying. It's we'll give this place a plug. It's Victoria's Pizzeria in Cohasset.
And if they want to send a sub up to me, I'll be here till 6 a.m. and could really use some food.
Which one would you like, John? Now, they have a pretty good menu here.
Honestly, that chicken parm... chicken parm with fries, and I could really indulge in that right about now.
That's a winner. So I'm trying not to eat. Like, I don't want to eat tonight. I'm trying to go 24 hours without eating here, 48 hours or whatever. It's just killing me here. All right, we'll press on, and we'll take some more phone calls. Also, is Kyrie Irving attempting to recruit someone else to the Celtics? We'll get to that as well. We'll do it next.